Mr. Marco Mendoza, how do you manage, after all these years, to keep such impressive strength and fluency, not only in your bass lines, but also on your remarkable vocals?
Oh, wow, well, thank you so much. How do I manage? I love what I do. I still love what I do. I like to say that I'm remaining hungry and thirsty for more. You know, after playing for so many years with so many great bands and learning and being inspired for, you know, for years and years with my colleagues, you know, I could drop a lot of names here, but you know who they are.
I know.
You kind of, you're inspired to take music to other places, to kind of own it and take it where you might want to take it and put your spin on it and have a good time. It's a blast. I still have a lot of fun, to be honest. What gets a little difficult is the travel. Traveling gets a little difficult. We get fried, we get toasted, but sometimes it just comes with the territory and you either do it like that or you don't do it at all. I was just talking to a few people. I have a lot of friends, as you can imagine, in the business that are pretty big players, big profiles, famous, if you will. They haven't gone out and played for years, for 4, 5, 6 years, because the circumstances are not right. And the reality is that they're not going to be right. They're not going to be like the 80s and the 90s again, ever. That's the reality. So you have to decide, like I do, what you do with your talent, what you want to do with the privilege of doing music. Do you continue? Do you challenge yourself to go out there anyway, even if the circumstances change? And I do. And so it's a challenge for me. As you can tell, it's a lot of dates on this run.
When was the best time for rock music? In the 80s? In the 90s?
I think everybody's got their own personal point of view of that. For me, I woke up. I started my career again, my sober career, in 87, September 20th of 87, because I got sober.
30 years?
Yeah, it will be this year. And so for me, my career and everything that I did as a person, as a human being, including my music, my career, had a different meaning. And so I approached it with, I respected it more. I appreciated it more.
Yes.
And regardless of what other people feel about it, it's a privilege. I feel it's a privilege to play music for a living. It's a gift. It's something that needs to be shared, you know? And so I'm still digging it, man. I'm still digging the whole journey. I'm going to be 85 next week, by the way.
Yes, I know. No. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Anyway.
So let's begin with 1990. It was your first major association playing bass for former Black Sabbath drummer Bill Ward for his solo album Along the Way.
I actually recorded a little bit before, but funny enough, I met Bill in sobriety. We met at the hospital, getting sober, and also with Ozzy. You know, he was part of that project. He was trying to get sober. I think everybody was trying to find another way. Mm-hmm. And so when I got approached by him, of course I said yes, man, absolutely. And we had a blast. I went in there and I was a little overwhelmed because I hadn't played in a while, and I was, you know, playing on the same album as Jack Bruce, and so many players that I was like, wow. But yeah, that was my first, I was putting my foot in the water, if you will, again.
Yes.
And of course, I got lit again and I got interested, and I love what I do, man. And so the rest started happening.
From 92 to 94, you were a member of Blue Murder, an excellent hard, heavy blues rock band.
Yes.
How was it for you to play in concerts and to record with John Sykes the second and final studio album, Nothing But Trouble?
Blue Murder, under the Blue Murder heading, I think we might have had one more. I think he had a 3-album deal with Geffen. No, you're right. It was Blue Murder with Geffen. The last one was Nothing But Trouble. But then we did 20, for a Century. We did Nuclear Cowboy. We did Out of My Tree.
Yes.
Loveland. We did so many with John. What can I tell you about John? John is a talented cat, man. Everything that he does, he's very meticulous. He plays great. He's part of rock and roll history, you know, with his involvement with Tigers of Pantang, Thin Lizzy, and then Whitesnake.
Yeah, Whitesnake,
the biggest songs ever written in rock and roll history. So for me, it was, again, it was a privilege. It was very cool working with him. And we got very close. We got to be very, 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 very close. And then he's the reason I got introduced to Scott Gorham and Brian Downey and Darren Wharton.
Yes.
To be honest. And 22 years later, Thin Lizzy, you know. So John is, we spoke not too long ago, and we're talking about possibly doing something. I hope it happens for a lot of reasons. But mostly because there's a generation of music lovers here that don't, if we don't watch it, they're going to not know who John Sykes is, and people need to know. So we're hoping things come together, and we're talking. So we'll see what happens. So just keep your eyes out for John Sykes.
What was the essence of your partnership with Ted Nugent? He is like you, a big supporter of gun rights, and he always enjoys hunting and fishing.
Yeah, let's see, we did a live album for Blunt Nugenti. We also did a live DVD under the same heading, I think, for Blunt Nugenti, and then a studio album, Crave Man. I had some great times with Uncle Ted, and he's amazing. He's one of the guys that inspired me to be a little more assertive about what I want to do in life, including music. He's one of those guys that doesn't want to waste any time. You know, his attitude is, go get it, man, go make it happen. It's not going to happen by itself in life, period. You don't have to agree with his politics. You don't have to agree with his opinion about everything. But as a human being, I have the utmost respect for him as a man, as a musician, legendary guitar player that he is. Again, another cat that's been part of rock and roll history since 1963.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it's incredible.
So for me, to play with somebody like that and hang out, I learned so much, and he inspired me so much. As far as the gun right thing, I believe in that everybody should have a choice to make their own decisions. That's it. You know, that's it.
If you want to elaborate on that more?
Well, I can, but no, that pretty much says it all. I mean, you should be able to choose if you believe in owning guns or not. When we start letting the government getting involved, and there's a breaking point. And I believe, you know, the First, Second Amendment is, it gives us the right to choose. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I also grew up in a hunting home. My father was a hunter. My father came from WW2. He was here in Europe during D-Day, Normandy and all that. And I have pictures and I have the guns and I have all the memorabilia that you can imagine. So I didn't know anything different. I grew up in Mexico.
In
Tijuana. I had a gun when I was 8 years old. I had my own .22 rifle. It was amazing. But the discipline of owning a gun, a handgun or a rifle that my father bestowed upon me is what made a difference. Because I could not put the bullet in the chamber if I was in the house. I could not goof around with it. Every time I used a gun, I had to put it all apart and clean it, put it in a place and lock it. That's how I
discipline.
Learned.
Discipline, yes.
Discipline.
I understand.
And that's what's missing in today's society. There's handguns and rifles floating around for anybody to pick and choose. And if you're unbalanced in any way, which is what happens here, you know, people don't know the difference. They lose touch of reality. They'll grab the gun, think it's a toy, and start shooting. And that's another thing. But he's a proponent of that, and I respect that. I think we should have the right to choose. It's what it is, you know. It's a big world out there, and I should respect your opinions, and I would appreciate reciprocation there, you know. Hey, I don't have to agree with you, but I respect your opinion. Boom, that's it. And this place, this whole planet would be a better place if we all, you know, live by those rules, bottom line. But you know what? It's only rock and roll, but I like it.
Yes. How was it for you to record four tracks, God of War, Going to Church, Trojan Horse, and The River, with Derek Sherinian his album Mythology? I know you are a great bass player, very profound, virtuoso, but in general, it's not easy for a musician, I think, to adapt to Sherinian's complex melodic and harmonic structures and also to his intricate rhythms.
Yeah, you know, Derek and I became friends in the business. You know, yes. He was doing a lot of the same gigs and we came across each other. We lived in the Valley. He lived in, wherever in Burbank, I was in Studio City. So we come across each other a lot. And he invited me. I got a call to play with his Planet X thing, which I was so impressed. And I'll be totally honest, it was so complicated and so deep. And I had a very small window in which to do this. And he had some dates across the U.S., I think. And I had to call him back and I said, bro, I don't have the time. I want to be able to kill this thing. I want to be able to eat it and swallow it up. But in 3 days, I'm going to be doing this. In a week, I got to do that. And da, 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 da. So I don't say that I regret it. But right now, I'm looking for things like that because I love the challenge. And if I had the time, I would jump on something like that. It's just very deep, man. You got to really know your shit. So I was flattered that he called, and I ended up in the studio with Zach was there, and who else, and Brian Tishy, and Steve Lukather. There's pictures out there.
And Simon Phillips. And he told me that it was very complicated and very difficult.
Heavy stuff.
Yes, but experience.
But it's very rewarding. It's challenging when you can facilitate something like that. It's another side of the brain, you know.
Yes.
I don't live there. Once upon a time, I wanted to live there. When I first got to L.A., I used to chop a lot, chop wood, and practice. And I thought I wanted to go in that direction. And I just, for some reason, ended up in another direction. I love playing with other cats. I love the challenge of moving an audience. And sometimes when you are too advanced, not everybody's going to be sensitive to that.
Of course.
And they're waiting for the vibe, but it's just going over and over and over. And you're playing very heavy, complicated stuff and very deep, and it just doesn't hit them.
Yes.
Right now, where I'm at today, I can stay on an E for 64 bars, and if I can make it work and make people smile and they can clap and have a good time, that's mission accomplished. So that's where I live today, you know? No, but it felt great. It was great. And I later on got him involved with Bad Boys, actually. I got him on that tour. Tommy Aldridge, John Sykes, and Derek and myself. The album is amazing. Somebody just played. I was doing an interview like this.
Yes.
And somebody played me a couple of tracks. And I'm going, whoa, that sounds amazing. I haven't heard. I don't hear my stuff. I don't know a lot of people that do, but I don't. A lot of people do hear their stuff. I move on and move on and move on. There's so much ahead. I keep looking ahead as opposed to the past, you know.
Mr. Mendoza, let's talk about David Coverdale's Whitesnake. Yeah. It was an important chapter of your career.
Yeah.
First, you played bass and also Spanish guitar on his third solo album, Into the Light.
You did your homework. I am impressed.
Yes, but I am a fan.
Thank you.
Do you remember what those sessions were like?
Well, first of all, I got the call. I got a simple phone call from David, and it was... Yeah, may I speak to Marco? Marco Mendoza. And then, this is? I said, who is this? This is David Coverdale, darling. You know, very eloquent.
In English.
And very English, yes. With his heavy English, beautiful voice, that tone, you know.
Baritone.
Yeah. And I'm like, I pause for a moment. I'm going, this has got to be a joke. Somebody, because I remember talking to somebody about it not too long before that. And it was like, you know, David... is going to end up calling you because you're working and doing this and doing that. He likes to call the cats that are on top of their game and that have a certain look and that can bring something to the table. And so he did call. And I'm like, no shit. I'm going, whoa, why? How are you, man? It's a pleasure. What an honor. Thanks for calling. What's up? You know, he says, well, I'm wondering if you could come up for lunch to my house. Let me know when you have a day free. Let's spend the whole day and I want to talk to you about a couple of things. I said, all right. He said, I'll have my assistant get in touch with you, and you talk to them. You resolve the day, and I think the next week I was up there. He flew me, and it was a great experience. You know, went to his house and showed me his pad. He lives in a very beautiful place.
In the mountains.
Yeah, his library of movies and albums, and just very impressive. I just found him to be very fun, and very interesting, and charming, and. We talked forever about everything. It's amazing. And he did ask me, you know, how's things with, he calls him Sykesy. Mm-hmm. How are things with Sykesy, you know? They're great, man. We're doing some things. He's not working this much, but we're getting busy with Thin Lizzy now. So, yeah, I see. And then he proceeded to play me all the videos I was on. It was like, whoa, now I'm really impressed. On the big screen, I'm talking, it was kind of weird. I'm sitting there with David Coverdale, and we're watching me play and sing and play, work the stage, and I thought, wow, this guy really did some homework. So long story short, we got along really well. We played around with the guitars, and he asked me about my writing, and I told him, I do a little bit of writing. That's something that I put on the back burner because I've been extremely busy since I got sober. And he found the sobriety thing very interesting. For him, and he shared with me that he's been trying a couple of times to kind of clean, and so we had a lot in common. First of all, we love music and all that, and then I told him about my Latin jazz trio in LA, and he said, yeah, I heard the video, when are you playing again? I said, I think next week or the week. Oh, I'm gonna be in LA, I'll come by and see you. So he came and saw me.
Fantastic.
You can imagine the audience. Yes. Was like, whoa,
David Coverdale is here.
Yeah. So we hit it off, and before you know it, he called me. He says, Marco, I'm doing this album, and I would love for you to be part of it. I got Earl Slick from David Bowie.
Bowie, yes.
And Danny Carmasi, and I'm going, I'm in, right away. So it was very cool, man. We had a blast. He takes his time. He waits for the music to happen. That's one thing I learned from him. And unfortunately... I haven't been able to do that with any of my solo projects. But I promised myself one of these days I would. Take your time. Don't be in a hurry. Let the songs develop. Let the music come to you. Let the lyrics come. My experience with developing music and writing music has been one of, let's hurry up. We have only a short period of time. So he took his time. The stuff started happening. We started working on the songs. And it was a great environment. We all stayed in one house. We all had our rooms. We had a cook, we had a maid, and we were in the mountains surrounded by snow
and
nature and bears. And I would go skiing in the morning and come back.
Right.
For me, it was like, wow. I was dating my now wife, and she would come up and ski. And it was just very cool, man, the whole experience. We had a blast. And Doug Bossi, too. Doug Bossi, who ended up co-producing that album. He did a great job. Great player. And it was a great bunch of guys, great experience. And then we got into the studio, and he says, Marco, I got this song. He heard me play a classical guitar. I got this song that I think you need to play on. I said, a bass? He said, no, I want you to play guitar on it. I said, well, you have Doug Bossi and Earl Slick. And you have that. He says, you know, I have this gut string that it's classical. It was a Segovia, it was an expensive Ramirez. Expensive, like very extremely expensive guitar. It says, I want you to use this, play it. So we recorded that one.
Yes.
I will follow you wherever you may go. I will follow you. Beautiful song. Wow.
Yes.
I need to do that song live. I just got chills. Ooh. That would be a good song for me to do, part of history, part of what I've done. I'm trying to collect songs that are a little obscure because I like to talk about my journey on stage, you know? Working with Lissy, working with Nugent, working with Cover. I haven't touched the Whitesnake stuff. For some reason, I don't want to touch it.
Yes.
Because there's no other voice like David Coverdale's voice. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. And what he recorded with those songs, that tone, that voice, nobody can equal. And it's become such a big part of the songs that I've heard people sing it. I've heard other people arrange things, and it's not the same. I'm sorry.
Yes. Point of view. In concerts, you formed with David Coverdale a remarkable vocal duo.
Wow.
What was the driving force?
Well, he knew that I wanted to sing. He knew that I loved singing. And at one point, I think we were trying to get songs into the set that would spark, you know, that would light some flames, you know. And I think I remember talking about it. And he said, you know, we need to revisit. We kept telling him, the Purple Stuff, you guys, what you did, you and Glenn then, and the boys, what you did, it was amazing, and Blackmore, and Ian, and you know, and John, that was amazing what you guys did there, you know, we should try and revisit. And then he decided to do those two or three songs, and he called me, he says, Marco, I want you to sing this part, this is you.
Yes.
This is you. And so I took it, you know, and
right.
I remember some of the other guys were a little whatever, you know, but I took it, I owned it. At first rehearsal, I sang it, and he went, okay, that's you, yeah. So for me, it was, again, representing a time in history and musical history, rock and roll history, that was just beautiful. It was a beautiful time, beautiful era. It was a privilege to be singing. I'm a big fan of Glenn. I think he's one of the baddest singers out there right now, and he has been for years, and bass player, and I consider him a friend. He's a friend, you know. So it was great, man, representing that little period in rock and roll history. It was great. Felt great. I would do it anytime again.
So why did you leave the band in 2005?
To be honest, my intention was not to leave. We were having such a great time. All of us, we were like brothers. We were on the road. I think the lineup was amazing. I think Timothy Drury and Reb Beach and Doug Aldrich, Tommy Aldrich and myself, I couldn't ask for better players myself, to be surrounded by better players in the back. You know, the lineup was amazing. And then playing Whitesnake stuff, it was great.
So what happened?
To get to the point, I got really itchy, like I do. I have this thing inside me that, if things are not moving, I'm very hungry, bro. I'm still very hungry.
Yes. Reaching for new horizons.
Because music is like that. Yes. Music is what you make of it. And we were working a lot with Whitesnake, and we were peaking. And in my opinion, we did the best could do. The next logical thing to do was to record. And we all had songs. We were starving. We were hungry. And we were submitting ideas and all that. And then David decided to take a break. So he took a break. It was that simple. Nothing personal. He says, you know, he deserves to take a break. He's in a different place in his career. I wanted to, no, don't take a break, bro. Let's go into the studio. Let's start digging in. Like we did Into the Light. With that lineup, yes, it would have been unbelievable. No doubt. But he decided to take a break. All of a sudden, I couldn't get in touch with him. He would send the calls through management and et cetera, et cetera. And I just wanted to say, hey, I'm going to go work with Neil Sean. Neil Sean called me to do Soul Circus, mm-hmm. Which ended up being an amazing project.
I'm
glad I did. And I have a great relationship with Neil. He's another freak of nature guitar player, man. Yes. Amazing cat. Yes. Human being altogether. He's a brother. He inspires me as well to be a better player and a better person.
And Journey is a great band. Yes.
Yeah, so he called, and then Nugent was calling, and a few other calls, man. And then Thin Lizzy called. And I think he wanted everybody in the band, the Whitesnake guys, to be somewhat exclusive at that point, which I understand. I get it. But I couldn't sit still. I couldn't say no to Neil Sean. I couldn't say no to Ted. Couldn't say no to Thin Lizzy when I didn't know how long we were going to take a break. Which ended up being a year and a half or something before anything else happened. I couldn't justify sitting and waiting for the phone calls. This is our next move. And so I rolled the dice, and yeah, they decided to get somebody else. So I knew that was going to be their reaction, but I chose what I had to do for me. And I'm glad, because it's been great since then, you know. I think I spent some good years there, and to this day is one of my highlights of my career, period.
Absolutely,
no doubt. And if there was ever a chance to go back and revisit with that lineup and with David, I would do it in a near second.
I hope so.
Well, you know, you never say never.
Yes,
but
yes,
absolutely. You know, a highlight and great time together, great.
How was it for you to be in Thin Lizzy and later in Black Star Riders?
It was great. Again, another classic rock and roll band, you know, that pretty much broke a lot of rules and they got in on the books of rock and roll history in a big way. Phil Lynott was a talent to be reckoned with in every possible way, and Scott Gorham and Brian Downey and Darren Wharton and John Sykes there towards the end, Gary Moore and Snowy White and Brian, you know, the cats after that. Or before that, before John. But it was great, man, playing those songs all over the world, big festivals, big venues, and we did a run of smaller clubs. I mean, we did everything you can imagine, every venue possible. So it was a blast. I had a great, great, great time. And I miss it already, but it is what it is. Black Star Riders, when it turned into the Black Star Riders thing, it went in a different direction for me, and I had other things I wanted to do. And the main thing is the Daisies. And my solo project.
Yes.
So when those opportunities came up, I'm going to do that. And there was other things that I could have not done had I given my commitment to Black Star Riders. Like I did two albums more with Neil Sean. I worked with Dolores O'Riordan. I went and did a couple of things all over the place anyway. And when you make a commitment with a band like Black Star Riders. It kind of keeps you from doing other things that you want to pursue. So I've learned not to do that until I'm ready to give it 100%, and I couldn't. Yes. It's time for me to move.
In 2007, you recorded your first solo album, Live for Tomorrow, with some of your friends, great guitar players like Steve Lukather, Richie Kotzen, Doug Aldrich, and Ted Nugent, with great drummers like Tommy Aldrich and Brian Tichy. Yeah. But most importantly, your son played on a few tracks.
You're so good. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was really fun for me to have my son play on. He just happened to be flying in from somewhere South America into LA, and we were in the studio. I picked him up. I said, "What are you doing? Let's get together." "Yeah, well, I'm in the studio. Come." And I picked him up, and he came over, and, "Why don't you play on that and play on that?" "Okay, cool." So we had fun. The whole experience, that one was great. Again, you know, having said that, I would take my time. I think Richie Kotzen and I put the whole thing together in 15 or 16 days, like that. It was quick, fast.
Great guitar, great voice.
And yes, amazing. That guy can do anything. He can play anything, and amazing singer. And he's fun in the studio. He's fun, you know? Which I love that energy when people don't take themselves too serious, and his work ethic. He gets things done. I'm like that.
Also, his project with Billy Sheehan and Mike Portnoy is very good.
Amazing. Yeah. The Winery Dogs.
Winery Dogs, yes.
But, you know, having friends like Steve Lukather, that all it took was a phone call. Amazing. He says, "Marco, where do you want me? When?" "Yeah, I have these days off. I'm at Richie Kotzen's place." "Oh, yeah, I can come down tomorrow." Like that. Boom.
Yes.
He came down. I send him a check. And he returned the check. It was just one of those guys, you know. It's so beautiful. It's cool. Same thing with Nugent. I called him. I said, "Oh, yeah, man, are you kidding me? It'd be my honor. Come on, brother." I sent him the track. He played on, sent it back. And I mailed a check just to show appreciation. It's business, you know. I got it back with, "I don't need your money. Thank you for that."
Great.
"Anytime you need me, call me."
Big heart,
and they've been there, they've done it, they know what it is that I was trying to accomplish, and a big support. And I would do the same. I would return the favor with any of these cats anytime.
Yes.
And the same thing with Brian and Tommy. It was like, yeah, of course. And then my son,
Marco Renteria.
Yeah, Marco Renteria. But Doug, same way, you know, he's a brother. Doug and I, he's a brother. And Richie, amazing. But the one I really had to pay a lot of money was my son. I had to call his mom and say, "Hey, you're teaching him well. Good job."
Yes.
So, it was a blast. And then I had my daughter Faith Lucia on the cover, too. It was a fun project. I love it. They play.
Casa Mendoza from 2010 is an adventurous journey, full of fusion, electric, jazz and progressive elements. It was perhaps a good opportunity for you to expand your horizons, especially on those compositions like Circle of Life or Kingdom of Paradise.
Very good.
I enjoy it very much.
Very good. Yeah, you know, Mascot Ed, who's also a friend, I'm talking to him about some other stuff right now, he said, you know, I want you to be who you are. I want you to have no boundaries and go investigate, and I think there's a market for that, and have fun, and we did. So Joey Heredia on drums, who I believe is one of the greatest drummers around, too. Steve Weingart from Simon Phillip and Dave Weckl.
Yes,
he's part of my Latin jazz funk a la go-go fusion project whenever possible. And then Rafael Moreira on the guitar, who's an amazing player, who's playing with Paul Stanley now, and Pink and Christina Aguilera and all that. So he's an amazing guitar player, songwriter, singer, too.
What is the essence of your current trio?
The essence is, the main objective is for me to play my songs. Basically, is to introduce to people my songs that I have in my catalog, you know. And mostly from Live for Tomorrow. And if I keep going, I'll bring some songs from Casa Mendoza as well, you know. But to be honest, I started getting invited. Come and do your thing. Come and do your thing. And I'm like, I'm busy, I'm busy, I'm busy. All of a sudden, it's like, come and do your thing. And I said, all right, I'll go do my thing. I'll call a few people. We'll learn a few songs from my album and go play. Yeah. And the result has been very cool. People are digging it. And I think tonight, I hope you stay for the show, you'll hear a variety of styles of music that influenced me and inspired me to be who I am today musically. So it's a bit of a journey, but basically I'm focusing on playing my original stuff and talking a little bit about my journey with, you know, with some of the bands that I've worked with. So it's fun. I have a blast. I talk a lot sometimes, but I think it's important. I think it's important for me to communicate to the audience who I am and connect, you know. And small venues are the places to do that. So we're having a blast, man. We started with 15 dates on this run. 15 dates. We're going to do it in, you know, 15 dates in 20 days. You know, I ended up with 45, 46 now, 47, whatever. So there's interest, and I'm very happy, man. I'm flattered people want me to come. There was offers for me to go to Israel. There was offers for me to go to Russia. I'm talking to Dubai and Sri Lanka and South Africa. And
but you prefer Romania, and we are here and we are happy.
Yes. Actually, yes. Because
this is the most important thing.
We were supposed to do only one, Bucharest and then Timișoara and then Cluj. All of a sudden there's five, and then figure, okay, now it's time for me to go home. So I have some work in Munich after this, and then I go home.
Yes.
So I had to kind of put my foot down and cross it and say, all right, enough, I need to go home. And so we're doing that. But we'll come back. It looks like we're talking about maybe October already.
Great.
Yeah.
The times we live in have imposed, perhaps, too much technology. What is your opinion?
Yes, we have. Absolutely. In the whole thing, the whole music industry, we've kind of abused it a little bit. But that's what it is, man. At the end of it all, people appreciate analog. People appreciate live performances. And, you know, studios. I'm doing more and more recordings with 2-inch tapes than ever. It's coming back. My daughter, who is 14 years old, 2 years ago asked for a turntable and some vinyl for Christmas. And we live in California, Southern California. So the signs are there that we've done the whole circle. The complete circle is we're coming back to the basics, which is people like you coming and hearing what we do tonight. And now we have this. We have the phones, video, to be the promotional vehicle. So we use it. I do that a lot. So there's some good things. And there's sometimes not so
good. Not so good thing, yeah.
Yeah, because your music will be shared without getting implemented financially or whatever, which is fine now. I'm a performer anyway. I'll play live anytime, anywhere, as long as I can. And so that's good with me. But I will say this, it's very hard, unless you're a pop star, to live off your record sales or your music, selling your music. Unless you've reached a point of fame and profile that's so big that you can, you know? The big bands that are already established. And they're not on iTunes, they're not on this or that, Spotify or whatever. They were smart enough, and I give them a lot of credit, because they saw, they could project ahead and go, this doesn't look right, I'm not going to participate. For a lot of us, we weren't smart enough, and it's there, it's gone, you know? But listen, playing music for a living is a privilege, it's a gift. I never want to forget that. I don't care how much money I make. Yes, I do. I like good things. I have a family. I love to be a provider. You know, I don't want to be concerned about financial insecurity as I get older. But it still is a privilege. And I'm having a blast. I'm enjoying the ride. And I'm going to take it as far as I can. And I'll use some of the digital tools because they're there. We're not going to it's not going to change.
Of course.
They're not going to go
of
anywhere.
Course.
Part of what it is.
Yes.
And that's it. But having said that, I like the idea of, you know, we're releasing vinyl, by the way, the Dead Daisies. We haven't talked about the Daisies.
Yes, three remarkable albums. Tell me more.
The Dead Daisies is, like, in my opinion, the best band I've ever been part of. For a lot of reasons. We don't, you know, we can talk about that another time. Feel free to call me and get in touch.
Yes.
In the future. But we have a new album coming out. Live and Louder, May 19th release date. Last year, in August, we released Make Some Noise. The year before that, it was Revolución, which we started recording in Cuba. And before that, it was...
The Daisies, Revolución, and Make Some Noise.
Yeah. In between that, there's an EP, The Face I Love, with five tracks that are killer. It's amazing. That's what Richard Fortus and Dizzy were not with. That other little band that's...
Guns N' Roses.
So, yeah, we had a great time. That band is just amazing, man. Right now, we're on a roll where we can't stop. We can't stop. Live album, we decided to release because it's a live band. We perform live, strong. We have all the freaking pistons going. Drummer-wise, Brian Tichy is one of the cats on the planet. Doug Aldrich on the guitar. David Lowy with his Mr. Riff Meister, and he's the founder of the band. And John Corabi fronting and singing and being funny and being a great human being. And yours truly, myself, I try to kind of enjoy the ride and do whatever I have to do. And we have great management, and we have a great social media team, and the label, SPV. It's all good. Ollie is doing an amazing job at SPV. So we have everything going for us, and so we'll see how far we can take it, you know?
Great.
Live album, and then we're going into the studio at the end of the year for a new studio album for next year. So we got plans, man. We got things to do. We're doing all the festivals.
What should be the greatest virtue in a musician like you?
To be appreciative of the gift of the privilege of doing music. That's it.
Have you found the philosophy, the credo of your life?
Yes, and that is be the best you can be and make a difference whenever possible.
Which are the next steps for Marco Mendoza?
All of it.
Yes.
Hi, this is David Coverdale from Whitesnake. You're listening to Mishwara. I'm delighted to be here. It's a great opportunity to say hello.
Hey guys, this is Marco Mendoza from the Dead Daisies, and you are listening to Radio Timisoara. I love you guys. We will see you soon. God bless. Rock on. Yeah, baby!